Welcome to the Power User Podcast, brought to you by NeoWin.net and WinCustomize.com. In this segment, we're talking about some hot topics in tech news. Returning to the show are Derek Batting, NeoWin Site Supervisor, Brad Wardell of Stardock Corporation and regular contributor, and Todd Tanner, NeoWin Game and News Contributor. Hi, guys. How are you doing?
All right. Hello. How you doing?
Pretty good. Todd, I understand you're in the middle of, sort of on the tail end, I guess, of Katrina.
Yes, we are.
Okay, so if we hear any thunder in the background, we know what's going on out there.
Yes,
God is seeking vengeance on the southeastern part of the U.S. No? Okay. Hopefully not.
I'll look at a flip around and come back around again.
Okay, yeah, well, hopefully not. Hopefully not. So how are things going down there, Todd? Is everything okay in your neck of the woods at the moment?
Aside from some thunder? Yeah, well, we had a direct hit the other day when it first came through. We had a 90-mile-per-hour wind gust here.
Wow.
Overpass actually blew over or something like that.
Wow.
I'm not quite sure.
Wow.
And we had down in Miami, they had like 22 inches of rain. So, yeah, it was pretty bad, actually.
Yeah, pretty scary stuff. Well, Glad to hear you're still alive and kicking.
Why, thank you.
All right, so the first thing that we wanted to talk about this week is the Halo movie. Woohoo!
Yay,
a movie. Derek, what can you tell us about the Halo movie?
It will be as good as Super Mario Brothers, because I think that's the question we're all
Oh, no!
Surely not. Surely not that good.
That was the greatest video game adaptation ever.
All right, Halo movie, Derek.
Yeah, they finally got their deal. Got it all solidified. It looks like after shopping around for about a year, Universal and 20th Century Fox agreed to pay them $5 million plus a capped percentage at 10% of all domestic box office receipts.
That is pretty steep on the box office receipts.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
Yeah.
That's a really good deal, actually. They originally wanted $15 million plus 15% of the box office receipts in the U.S. and Canada, and nobody would touch it.
I can imagine not. That's, I mean,
you don't
box
get a deal like that.
Yeah, no, you really don't. Not even Halo. Historically, video game or movies based on video games haven't always done all that well at the box office. So, what do you guys think? How is Halo going to do?
It depends if with the Doom movie coming out, I think people are going to compare it to that. You know, because you're taking the same style of game and putting it into a movie. And if Doom comes off really strong, I think people have more hope for Halo. But if it comes off more like, what was the one with Mila Jovovich?
Oh,
Resident Evil.
Yes.
Exactly, yeah. That wasn't getting the best reviews in the world, either of them. So you can kind of look at that and go, oh, they never work. You know, we'll just have to see. We'll have to wait and see. There's no director yet. No one's been officially cast. As far as casting, nobody knows yet, so it's hard to say.
They've just spent a lot on the script.
Exactly. They just got the deal inked, and they're shooting for a summer 2007 release. And the movie will be based on both Halo and Halo 2. And they're going to fight aliens, and that's it.
And it's going to be awesome, maybe. We can only hope. Well, you know, with a movie, it's like all of the elements have to come together to make it a really good movie. You can have a mediocre movie if you, say, have not such great acting, maybe. Like, if just one element is missing, maybe you can pull it out still. But for a movie like Halo, it's all action, so hopefully it can really, you know, hopefully they'll try and do something good with it. In keeping with the video game theme of the moment, Todd, Sony has created Sony Station Exchange, which to me is pretty new, kind of exciting actually. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, it's been around for a little over a month now, I believe, that they launched it officially. They were beta testing it for a little while before then. And what it is two or three specific servers that you're allowed to play on, and you're allowed to trade items and characters from the game on the server. It's sort of like an auction type thing. And as most Neowinians know, most MMO companies do not look kindly on character selling and out-of-world, so to speak, stuff like that. So
we're talking about being sold for actual
money.
Money,
real money, yes.
Right. Like on eBay.
So what they... You have either you make a character on the new server, or you can transfer your characters and possessions onto the new servers. And you can leave the game, go to the exchange, I believe it's just a regular website, and you use real money, real world money, and you can buy and sell the virtual game items, say like a really cool axe that you got from a really cool monster that you killed, or a high-level wizard that you have, or some platinum in the game, money-wise, that you could sell. And I believe from the article I read that one man actually sold his level 50 sage for $2,000 on the exchange.
Holy
there.
Holy moly!
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah. true.
That is.
And first, how many hours of effort did it take? I mean,
well,
for an hourly job, would it be a dollar an hour?
Well, here's the thing, you know, and I don't want to start a war here with Neowin, but you know, the best comparison I have is with World of Warcraft. Okay, I have both games, and in World of Warcraft, in a little over a week, I've gotten a character up to level 42. The cap is 60.
Yeah, but how many hours did you have to play to get to that level?
A little over 200 right now.
Okay.
Give or take. In EverQuest 2, in a month, I couldn't get up to 50, which is the cap. It's just much deeper and harder in EverQuest to level up that way. So this guy that sold his level 50 Sage, he probably put who knows how many hours into the game.
Right, so it's certainly not
it's a lot
profitable
of
venture to do it that way. So you're like, wow, $2,000 is a lot. Well, I hate to, as a one of those weasels that would probably be tempted to buy that, I could see myself, I hate to say everyone's going to be making fun of me forever for this, but I've never done this, but I could be tempted to be one of those guys if I, because I don't have that kind of time. My World of Warcraft character is only level 40, and I've been playing since the internal beta of World of Warcraft.
Right, well, that's really, that's what I think, why these people will go in specifically to these servers and create these characters, as the thunder goes off in the distance, and they will create these characters or transfer them over, and they will build them up as much as possible to the best gear and the best items and everything, and sell them so that people, like, you know, some newbie that comes along that has never played an MMO before will see that and say, hey, you know, for, I don't know, $500, let's say, I can buy that character and have the top-end character on the server and just go in there and just, you know, have fun and not have to worry about leveling.
Yeah.
And yeah, you don't have to worry about leveling or questing, really. Just go in there and have some fun.
And previously, you wouldn't have made any money from it.
Right. Well, no, you could, not officially, of course. Some games, it's actually your account would be banned if they found out you did stuff like that. There's been plenty of people in World of Warcraft that specifically go and farm, quote-unquote, for gold, and they'll sell that in, you know, offline websites or whatever, on eBay.
See, it's smart that Sony's turned around, and instead of saying, you know, if we find out you've done this, we're going to ban you, and has turned around and said, not only do we allow it and encourage it, we'll facilitate it. You know, we'll
right.
turn this into a service for you. If this is what you're going to do and this is what you want to do, let us help you out. And
for
in
percentage.
Turn, and yeah, in turn, we'll take 10%. We'll charge you $1 to list items or $10 to list a character, and everybody's happy. I mean, the average user, they're reporting now in the first 30 days, the average person spends $70, has
right.
already spent $70 per person on the average in 30 days alone. I mean, they've already seen $180,000 in transactions in 30 days. So it's only going to get huge, you know, not
well,
just
see,
bigger, but massive.
See, Sony is, you know, they've been in MMO business since it started, okay? They have EverQuest, which is EverCrack, and
right.
they have EverQuest 2, which, of course, isn't quite as popular as EverCrack, but still it's fairly popular. And they get a 10% commission on every sale. They get a charge of $1 for a listing fee for any currency or other item, a $10 listing fee for a character. I mean, it adds up there. They could, you know, they were smart, like you said, to do this finally. And I probably down the road, I wouldn't be surprised if Blizzard or one of the other MMO companies does the same kind of thing.
I wouldn't be surprised either. And in fact, I think Sony has said that they don't have any plans of doing this for their other currently running MMOs, but in the future, they're looking to do that for future games that they create.
I think it's smart business. Yeah, it's definitely smart business. If they open it up to other games, it's only going to get bigger. And then it'll eventually become the norm. You know, it's offering people something that's regulated where they can feel safe in an environment and not wind up getting ripped off like so many do on eBay. You know, they don't have to sneak around, worry about whether their 50th level character is going to wind up getting banned because they went to eBay, you know. I think it's a smart
right.
move on Sony's part.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks very much, guys. That's very enlightening, actually. I'm going to change the topic just a little bit here. WinFS, the word on the street is that Microsoft has just last week put the finishing touches on the first beta release of WinFS. Brad, I know you don't know anything about Microsoft stuff, so wake up. We're doing a show here.
Yeah, trying to download porn from these .xxx areas, but
we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
God, right now I'm very interested, but in a second or two I'll be totally lose all interest.
Right.
Oh yeah, WinFS, which is often called WinFS for file system. It does not stand for file system; it stands for future storage. Is Microsoft's next-generation attempt to organize data across on your local hard drive and on your network. And the way they want to do this is with an SQL database. And a lot of people in the industry kind of expected Microsoft to go in this direction some years ago because they figured, well, how does Microsoft compete with Oracle? And I remember talking to Dvorak about this at the time and said, I bet you that Microsoft will find some excuse to bundle SQL into the system. In fact, that was what started Stardock ThinkDesk some years ago, was in preparation for that day. And indeed, Microsoft is moving forward with an SQL database version layer on top of NTFS for people to organize their programs. And at the upcoming PDC, I guess Microsoft is going to start letting developers know that WinFS may actually make it out in time to ship with Windows Vista, which would be a huge, huge shock. And I do not think that's going to happen, but I've been wrong many times before. But what
WinFS, WinFS Beta 1 is available on MSDN for download right now as an ISO. It's about 76 meg.
Cool. And I mean, I haven't got to try it out, so I don't know how fast it is. But in theory, theoretically, if WinFS does everything it promises to do, you'll be able to organize your data as you see fit. You won't be constrained by the existing 20-year-old file system architecture we kind of have today with C:\ program files. You'll be able to put things however you want because it'll be abstracted and deal with it like a database. I mean, if you think about it, neowin.net, wincustomize.com, they're just skins on top of a database. I mean, I could take if I could use Neowin's database, I could create a whole new way of displaying the exact same information, all because of the way the data is handled in a database. Mm-hmm. With WinFS, the same thing could be done with your files. And if you have a Microsoft server that's WinFS enabled, then you could potentially do it across your network, which would be quite interesting.
So it basically takes everything that's been standardized on the web as far as calling and spewing back data and putting that on the desktop machine for the average user and putting an easy interface on top of it.
Well, there's a whole bunch of SQL developers at this point, right, in the evolution of the personal computer. And once those developers are unleashed to be able to deal with your file system as a database, one can only imagine the kinds of tools that will suddenly be available for organizing your stuff. Because let's face it, I mean, here, Derek, how big is your hard drive on your machine right now?
My C drive is 120 gig.
Yeah, so all right, so you're a loser. But I mean non-losers have like half a terabyte I mean 500 gigs is on a new system, easy. And so you can imagine of course here I am with my puny laptop with only has 80 gigs. But my loserness was already well established. But a lot of people have 500 gigabytes on their home computer. Trying to find something is a pain, and that's why programs like Google Desktop have been such a godsend, but those things are still pretty primitive compared to what a fully SQL database abstraction of your files and other data could become.
A lot to look forward to, it sounds like. I'm speechless.
We just say, boy, is that cool.
Boy, is that cool.
I wouldn't know cool. I'm a loser.
Well, yeah. Apparently.
You know, it is better than cats. I shall see it again and again.
All right.
I laughed. I cried. It became a part of me.
Well, remember, you're a big man compared to me. I've only got 80 gigs.
I have 40, so.
All right, now that we've just established the size of everybody's hard drive, can we move on?
Well, you know, it's not the size of the hard drive that matters. It's how it's used.
It's what you do with it.
Right. I mean, are you compressing your data?
All
right,
enough. Enough of that. We're going to move on now. I am officially changing the topic. Peer-to-peer shift from BitTorrent to eDonkey.
Ooh,
Derek,
boy.
What do you know about that?
Well, thank God that software piracy can be made more efficient than ever. Oh, no, I know. Everyone, go ahead. Everyone's going to flame me and say, no, there's legitimate uses for peer-to-peer. And indeed, there are. There are lots of good legitimate uses for peer-to-peer. But let's be real. If you were to do a measurement of does anyone know offhand the percentage of ISP traffic these days is thought to be peer-to-peer file sharing?
Yeah, between 50% and 70%.
Yeah, if you had to guess how much of that is illegal files being or copyrighted material being transferred, what would you guess?
I would say more than not.
Right, certainly. Certainly more than 50%.
If we're talking about strictly peer-to-peer traffic, then yes, definitely.
Well, I think we can pretty efficiently say that, in fact, it is mostly illegal traffic because the reason that the shift is happening from BitTorrent is because of the crackdown from Hollywood.
That's exactly it. Yeah, well, CacheLogic did a little survey here last year and this year and compared their findings, and they found that more people have switched over to eDonkey from BitTorrent, and they think it's probably because of the ISPs that are getting called with court orders and all the people that are getting sued, you know, the Motion Picture Association of America and the recording industry and all these lawsuits that are going all over the place. You know, it used to be CASA was the big thing, and then all the lawsuits went out, and everyone scattered for something else they thought was more private or more secure. And then, you know, everybody found BitTorrent, and they thought, oh, they can't possibly find us here because everything's decentralized, and that's just not the case. So now they're scrambling back to eDonkey to see if they can cover their butts a little better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, peer-to-peer, my God, we could do a whole hour-long show at least probably on that
and
topic.
And we will.
and we will bore you to death with it. No, I'm kidding. But people need to understand. I think a lot of people honestly don't seem to understand that just because you can get something doesn't mean it's legal for you to download it. Just because the peer-to-peer technology is legal doesn't mean that everything you get out there is legal.
Well, then you have the wares users who will rationalize it up the wazoo. Oh,
right.
Software's too expensive. They're ripping me off. I wouldn't have bought it anyway.
They're all
already
rich.
Oh, if it's any good, I'll buy it. And they'll give examples of several things that they've bought after they've waresed it. And, you know, I mean, you're talking to a guy who basically doesn't put any copy protection on his stuff because I think piracy is over, you know, way overestimated, but still, you know, call a spade a spade. If you're waresing stuff, you're a pirate, and
mm-hmm.
you know, don't.
You're stealing stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You're stealing. Don't wiggle out of it, and that's why. I don't try to tell me that most people using BitTorrent or whatever aren't using it for downloading, you know, movies or songs or software because that's what they're doing. You'd not need a generic search. I mean, World of Warcraft. I'm not downloading my World of Warcraft updates through some sort of search engine. I mean, Microsoft's using peer file sharing. I believe they actually use BitTorrent, don't they?
Blizzard does, yeah.
Yeah, Blizzard does. But I mean, they're in control of it. They're taking care of the torrents or whatever, whatever the latest term is. You can tell how up to date I am on the terminology. But the fact
loser.
Is that yeah, loser. Hey, I only have 80 gig hard drive.
80 meg hard drive.
80 meg, all right.
80 meg, yeah. Hey, when I was young, we didn't have. I just don't like it when people try to rationalize out that's not what it's being used for. It's like, bull. It's being used mostly for piracy.
Yes,
you know,
yes, you're
said.
Very smart. Yes, we understand.
I went to college. I went to college for 15 and a half years, and I may not have graduated.
All right.
Hey, Todd, you still with
yes.
us? I seem to be hearing a lot of thunder in the background there.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Died yet?
Well, I'm glad that
got better.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, thank you very much, Brad. I think we do need to do a peer-to-peer show, but we're going to have to
save
that.
Then I can rant for the entire segment.
Well, you won't be on it.
Oh,
I
see.
Totally getting other people.
Yeah, they're going to have only people with 100 gigabyte hard drives or better will be allowed on, and so I'll be stuck.
That's exactly right. Either you go buy one or... Okay. Well, you got to have a space for all that stuff you downloaded, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Triple X Domain.
Oh, yeah, finally. What was this other stuff even about? Why were we talking about this other junk when there was all the Triple X stuff?
I'm just
going to
be disconnecting you now, Brad, so that we can discuss this. All right. Now, you be silent, and I will try and give a summary here. For those
How big's your hard drive?
A lady never tells.
1.21 gigabytes.
Yeah. Surely it must be 18 terabytes. I don't know. No. Anyway, Stuart Lawley, an entrepreneur who's currently from Florida. He's apparently taken some time off because he hit it big just before the .com bomb. He's trying to create what some people are calling the equivalent of an internet red light district. He wants to create the .xxx domain. He's actually not a pornographer, but he sees a business opportunity in that he can create this .xxx domain, sell the websites for $70 to $75 a pop, and make some money. You know, it could be a good thing, could be not necessarily a good thing because...
It's about time someone saw the potential of porn on the internet because, you know, up until now, where do you even get porn? I mean, you have to... On the internet.
It's
impossible to
find. I don't know. Can you use Google or something?
Right.
Sure.
What the hell is Google? What are you talking about?
You can just go to whitehouse.com and find, it's everywhere. It's out there.
What was that domain again? I'll be back with you in a minute.
There is two ways of looking at this, I think. One is that if there's a .xxx domain, it might be easier to block those domains if you don't want to, obviously you won't just accidentally stumble across some website. If you've got your kid who's trying to do some government report and they go to whitehouse.com instead of whitehouse.gov, that kind of thing can't happen.
Yeah, but if I'm running on my various porn sites, that I run, I want people to accidentally, officially I would not want to admit that, but, there's got to be a reason why they call it whitehouse.com and not white,
Exactly.
They do want people to
they do
go
want
to
people.
It.
Right.
You take out the teenagers from the equation and, it's a much smaller business.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Porn is here to stay, I think. I don't think there's any getting around that. I mean, as much as various entities might wish to get rid of it.
The big hullabaloo about the XXX domains right now is not so much trying to force the pornography sites to use the domain and making all that money off of it. It's all the push from people like the Family Research Council. I mean, even, it's been thrown back and forth between conservative religious or political groups, why it should happen, and then others are coming along and saying, no, this will never work, or it's not necessary, or the internet's already too polluted with it, why bother? It's going to take more time, more litigation, the whole thing. It's just been one big debate after another,
And even if the United States finally decided to pass a law saying that all X-rated websites have to be on a .xxx domain, how do you enforce it overseas?
Well,
exactly.
How do you? I mean, I don't think there is. How can you? I just don't see how that's possible.
Can't. And if the U.S. tried to strong-arm it, you just add fuel to the fire of the resentment that the U.S. controls the root domain.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the Family Research Council recently demanded that the Bush administration do something about making a decision about the .xxx domain. And what they decided to do was table it. They just put it on hold. So who knows?
A brave
what...
decision.
Yes, isn't it? So maybe they're hoping that their term in office will run out and somebody else will have to deal with it. Apparently, the .xxx domain is for adult content websites. That means that pornography would be on this domain, but it would also be, let's say, sex education websites that have specific pictures of, various parts would be forced
what
to be in the
Doctor. What parts, Kristen, are you referring to?
I can't explain them to you, Brad. You're just going to have to find out on your own. Oh. You have to do a little bit of research. But
you'll have to go to poweruser.xxx for that.
Oh, touche.
Yes, indeed. So, a site that was specifically geared toward education would not be pornography, but it would have these specific images and therefore would be forced into a pornography domain. It doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, so WebMD would theoretically have to have a XXX domain name.
Boy, it's such a convoluted story, and the more you think about it, the harder...
It's a very complex issue.
The harder it is to really sort of disseminate, because...
I just find a hard time just taking the whole issue that seriously, because it's not going to happen. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the government can't really do anything. This might have been an idea, 10, 20 years ago. Well, all right, not 20, 10 years ago, it might have been possible to do something like this. But now, it's way too late to get that going. It's only going to work if the porn producers actually see a financial incentive to do it that way. And they might. There might be angles where they can make money that way. But in terms of the government trying to do it, it's never going to happen.
The real issue here is not so much forcing them to use the XXX domain. That's only one very small part of the big picture that's happening here. I mean, they've already one example is a proposed tax on adult websites. Another bill approved by the House of Representatives would boost fines for broadcasting indecency, on cable and TV networks. More censorship as far as music and movies are concerned. The whole thing, this is just wrapped up as one small part of the internet portion of the overall censorship that's coming down through the Senate and the House of Representatives and government in general.
I'm just hoping my PC doesn't explode.
I can hear the thunder in the background there. It's God. He's coming for us.
Now, can you show us a storm? Oh, wait. No, it's audio.
Yeah, too bad. Sorry.
It's not like CNN if you want to hear about how they just discovered FTP.
FTP?
What's that?
Yeah.
That's as bad as that goggle thing you were talking about earlier.
You hear one of the CNN anchors said that they were using a new technology called FTP. For the reporters to upload pictures to the broadcasting center.
You can send pictures and video over computers.
Yeah.
What?
Those were her exact words.
What is this? Suppose that, this isn't Flash Gordon.
Welcome.
Wonder if they were using Windows 97.
Modern.
Yeah.
They were using Windows 97.
That's it. I'm sure they must have been.
They need to use the BitTorrents. I hear that you can get that on the Windows.
Yeah. Hey, what browser do you use? I use... Windows.
Windows Internet.
I do. I use Windows. There you go.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. The Windows.
The Windows.
I use
yes.
the Windows.
All right. Enough making fun of
the interweb.
It makes me feel like a big man.
Yeah,
welcome to the world of tomorrow.
God's telling me not to make fun of CNN anymore in the background there.
Yeah, I heard it. Okay. Well, in the hopes of keeping Todd from getting struck by lightning because he's got his computer and various other electronic equipment on, I think we're going to cut this one off about right now. But thank you, Derek,
Yay.
Brad, and Todd for joining us. I really appreciate it. Todd especially for sitting through the thunder. Thank you for listening, everyone. This week, TiVo released TiVo Desktop 2.2, which allows users to transfer TV shows to their computers. Joining me today is regular contributor Brad Wardell, a big TiVo fan, and Paul Boyer, who has built many a computer system using SnapStream, or as we call it today, Beyond TV. Hi, guys. How are you?
Woohoo!
Good.
Hey, Brad. I'm glad to hear you. Good.
Oh, yes.
Right. So what can you tell us? I know you're a big fan of TiVo. What can you tell us about this new TiVo program?
Well, while all you nerds out there have been playing around with SnapStream and trying to get your computers to work with your latest get your TV shows work, I went down and got a few years ago got a TiVo and said I'm not messing with it. I'm not going to sit there and try to figure out I don't know why the recording didn't work quite right or why it's skipping or why the sound didn't work right this time because I don't have the right compression going. No, I got a TiVo, but the nerds had one particular advantage over me. They could get their stuff off their computers and put it onto other computers, or they could put it on their pocket PC, or they could burn DVDs with it, while losers like me were stuck with it just being on TiVo. But TiVo this started releasing a program called TiVo Desktop, and it made it very easy to get your stuff off your TiVo and onto your computer. And I set it up last night, and it was incredibly easy. I couldn't believe how easy it was. I found a pretty old USB Linksys wireless adapter, and I just put it on the back of my my TiVo Series 2 machine, and it picked it up. It downloaded a firmware update, and voila, it was working. I couldn't believe how easy it was to get going.
Did you actually put something back on the TiVo yet? Or are you still just getting stuff off the TiVo?
Right. I mean, hold on. We're going to get there, my friend. Yeah. Oh, keep your pants on. We're just talking about getting the thing going, first of all. So, I mean, this is how easy it was, though. I mean, even on a PC, hooking up a USB adapter, like one of those Linksys ones, requires specific CD-ROM drivers and all this. In this case, I mean, Microsoft could learn something from this. I plugged in the adapter, the wireless adapter, to the TiVo. It recognized what it was, even though it was old, and downloaded the drivers from TiVo, it was working. And then I went onto my PC, downloaded TiVo Desktop version 2.2, and then I could start copying all my stuff over, which was really cool. And I could put play music and pictures on my television. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was quite cool because I got a gazillion MP3s and
so
such
put
on my
a USB card,
wireless USB,
wireless, one of those
USB
blue
adapter.
Ones.
Yeah, one of those crappy blue ones we have at the office
that never work on the PC.
Exactly.
Holy moly!
And I just plugged it in and it picked it up and it was on my LAN and from there I my wife's been streaming MP3s on it all day through our TV because it has a little bit nicer speakers than other things in the house. And yeah, it's just amazing. And what's new in version 2.2, apparently, and I don't have this working yet because I have to download the new TiVo operating system to support it. But supposedly, you can now put videos from your computer, if they're in the right format, and play them onto your TiVo, which is great because now I can finally watch all the porn I've downloaded. On my television. I mean, because I always keep watching it on my laptop or on a little screen because it seems kind of dorky. But now I can watch it like, my neighbors who buy those DVDs or whatever and see it on the big screen TV, which is kind of cool.
Or more importantly, you can borrow my 300 gig drive full of every episode of South Park and Stargate and watch it.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't know about that because that's probably violating some rule and I wouldn't do that. But,
right.
But yeah, I have definitely been enjoying the fact that I can put pictures on there and so you can have friends over and have a slideshow from pictures that are on your computer. But I think a lot of people who have TiVos would probably be intimidated by this sort of thing, because I think, hooking it up to your network, I mean, gosh, that sounds like a lot of work. How do you get to work? Because they're so used to how crappy Windows is at getting this stuff to work. And this was the most painless thing I've ever worked with. It was just plug in, download the software, install it. It immediately detected the TiVo. I didn't have to even point it to an IP address or anything. It just detected it and downloaded my listings, and I was able to download it all. Now, there are some gotchas. You can't just... First of all, the files are in a .tivo format. They're not WMVs or something. So you can't... They're like... Each show is like 200 megabytes or 400 or 600 megs. They're huge, and you can't do anything with them because they're in a special format.
And
you can't legally do anything with them.
Well, there aren't even... TiVo, every version of TiVo Desktop breaks everyone who tries to find a way to extract the raw stuff. I went around. The first thing I did, of course, is I went online and I started trying to find programs that can do that. And there are quite a few programs that will, except that 2.2 breaks them. So that was a bit of a bummer. And then there are and a lot of those programs are quite complicated to work. But they have made a deal with Sonic, and they will let you burn DVDs with it. So I'll probably get that for $50. I can burn DVDs with, and a lot more. It's a deluxe version, and burn DVDs of those movies so that I can get them off my get them off my TiVo, and if I go on a trip, I can watch. I don't mind having them on DVD. I would just put them on my laptop, and I can watch stuff I've archived onto while I'm on a plane or something.
Yeah, but you still have the limitations of it just being a TiVo in general. I mean, you can't copy.
Here it comes. All right, college boy. No, go ahead, Paul. Tell us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the beauty of like a SnapStream or Myth TV or something like that is that it records it in an unencrypted format. So it's like everything I record on my Beyond TV, I can keep forever and play as many times as I want. And there's nothing, you know, if my TiVo dies or if my one computer dies, I pull the hard drive out and I put in another one and it plays fine.
I agree. So, that is a big advantage. I don't know what the licensing issue that TiVo had to go through, and I don't really fully understand why TiVo felt the need to have their format be in its own .TiVo format instead of WMV or something.
Well, one of the reasons...
Anyone have any ideas?
Yeah, actually, I do. One of the reasons might be, as you said, you can't edit it. You know, if somebody wanted to make some montage to their favorite song or just some kind of editing thing, let's say in Premiere or whatever they've got to edit with, the makers of the TV shows they want to keep control over that, I would imagine.
Sure, but why isn't that affect Beyond TV or Microsoft Media Center Edition?
It does affect Media Center Edition to a minor degree in that Microsoft has actually made the Media Center Player just a free thing that anyone can use. But I think that it still has some DRM just built into it.
But SnapStream doesn't, or Beyond TV does not. It's just plain old .WMVs. Why aren't...
Or you can actually record as AVI. You can even record as DivX. That way you're totally...
So how is Beyond TV immune from those issues? But, you know, the chumps like me are using TiVo are looking at .TiVo files that are, like I said, they're huge, 600 megabytes.
I don't know. It's probably just a personal use thing, you know, that maybe Beyond TV is not big enough to get hit on the radar yet.
I think Beyond TV is probably a lot harder for the average consumer to set up, so it's something...
I don't know, Paul, do you think it's hard to set up?
Well, it's not hard to set up. It's hard to rely on. I mean, I started it back like a long time ago, and it was buggy in the beginning, and you needed to have just the right settings. You had to have just the right encoder. You know, I still get weird things. I have everything streaming to a network drive, and now I find out that it's not indexing the network drive. So I'll record stuff, it'll copy to the network drive, and it'll not know it's there. So, I mean, those are things that you're not going to get on a TiVo, which is, you know, reliable and works every time, and your grandma can use it.
Right, that's what, I mean, I got into SnapStream at the beginning, too, and I have Beyond TV 3, and every time I'd run it, there'd be something. There would always, it was a different bug every version, whether it be, it was really choppy because I was using a wrong encoder, or the sound would cut out, and there's always, you know, a bug in it that would be affixed to the next version, but then there would be something else, and I never even got into the issue of where it was getting slow or choppy because there were too many files. So I basically went, I'm going to just get a TiVo, plug it in. I just watch my shows. Yeah. I'm a little bummed that I can't do anything with high definition with it. So that's one of the things holding me back from getting HDTV is that I don't think if there is an HDTV TiVo, I certainly don't – I know I don't have it because I'm running the Series 2. But I just wanted the thing to work. And now for me – the thing that kills me is I have, every time I go on a television show or something, I'd like to record on my TiVo so I can show my friends. See, I have a real job. I really do. Look, I'm on MSNBC. But eventually those fill up. It takes many years, of course, because I, you know, don't get on very much.
Times repeated, rerun over
and over. Yeah, exactly. But now I can take them off, and if I pay $50 for this Sonic thing, I can burn them on the DVD, and then I can watch them anytime I want. And keep my TiVo clear, which is, I think, what I was looking for. That's what I was looking for.
I think one of the things that TiVo needs to do is allow you to start hooking up external hard drives. So, because that would be different. If you could just go buy a USB 2 drive, plug it on there, and now I've got another 6 million gigs, you know, then that would be great.
Right, but if 2.2 really lets you copy things back onto the TiVo, isn't that almost the same thing, where I can just have them go back and forth between...
Yeah.
The 600 megs is on a 802.11b connection is not very fast, but eventually they'll have 802.11n, and then it won't be really an issue, will it?
One of the major things, I think, actually, the reason we kind of skipped over with their encryption is actually because they're going to be introducing their download service, and that's going to be premium content, and they're not going to want you copying that off, or if they do, they're going to want strict control of what you can do with it.
That's a good point.
Because, I mean, that's apparently...
So, I'll be going on TiVo and actually pick... You know, watch some movie. I don't see how they can really do that, though.
Well, you have to have broadband, and you have to, you know, and you go in and you essentially say, oh, look, it's, Fantastic Four to pick on.
Oh, so, all right. So,
and,
so,
you know, boom, download, and it downloads it, and then, you know, in 4 hours when it's done, you go and you watch it. Or it'll streaming technology. I've seen, they on Engadget, they had some screenshots of a working version, but I don't know the details yet.
Oh, I see. That would be kind of cool if I could, like, instead of having to, you know, my gut demands, if I want to get my gut bigger, I need to cut down exercise. And, you know, I have to walk a little bit to get to the Blockbuster. This way I could eliminate the last vestiges of actually moving around at all.
And
just
true.
Pick out the, and then I could finally get porn, you know, professional quality porn and not feel funny about it. You know, when I go into the Blockbuster and say, you know, do you have, blah, blah, blah. I won't mention it, but.
And that is the ultimate goal, though, is to eliminate exercise completely. And when I say exercise, I mean movement as much as possible out of your life. And
yeah, I don't think it's fair to say that what I do is exercise by walking around. But I mean, if you lower the bar far enough, and I have, merely walking to the car to drive to the Blockbuster that's down literally a quarter mile away because I don't want to walk to it, even though the weather's nice.
No, of course can't.
If I can eliminate that, then yeah, that's much more efficient.
Right.
Now here's one gotcha for you though, is that for a while now, I never actually do it, but technically I could have been doing this on the Beyond TV for like a year and a half now because there are services like Cinema Now. You can actually download it. And since they're regular, they're essentially using Microsoft's codecs to make these things, and they're DRM'd, but as long as you have, once you've installed their driver, the Beyond TV just thinks of them as WMVs, and you can actually watch them straight on your Beyond TV. They still expire, but you can do it.
Yeah, but so?
For 2 years now, been able to do that.
Ah, TiVo, I see.
1 year. TiVo just hadn't even got it working yet.
Yeah, but again, TiVo is very... One has to can only imagine how much effort they had to put in order to make it so that I could put on a 3-year-old wireless USB adapter, one of the earliest Linksys, and just have it work.
That is true. That is true.
That is
That's
handy.
Impressive. Of course,
and I think a lot of people want to go for that ease of use too, which is why TiVo is more popular than SnapStream.
Oh God, I would never recommend building a Beyond TV box to my grandmother.
No, they're sponsoring this episode.
Okay. I would recommend. Even my grandmother can make one of these.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's interesting. I think it's neat. I don't know if it's going to save TiVo. I think that they're kind
of... They got to get high definition support in real soon.
Well, they already have... I mean, they have high def models, and other competitors have high def models, but you have to... Usually only the cable stations are supplying them because they're the only ones who have like a controlled high def signal, and plus you have to have a 300 gig hard drive in it, and then you get 30 hours if you're lucky, so
yeah. But with this though it's not really an issue anymore. You can just have it keep, if they can make it so you can copy the things onto a removable hard drive over your network, okay, or however, then it's really not a problem. But I guess I do agree with you, they should support removable hard drives.
Well, that was the Moxie Media that was going to come out that got bought up by somebody, was going to do that, and they were, it was going to come with integrated Wi-Fi, it was going to come with external hard drive support and all these things like that, and it just never happened. It must not be as easy or at least as cheap as we would like it to be.
Right.
Well, excellent, you two. Thank you very much for sharing your experiences here. I'm sure this will be good information for our dozens of listeners. So I appreciate
just remember,
you joining us.
Just remember.
You gotta vote for
Beyond
us.
Beyond TV. So easy my grandma could do it.
Right, exactly.
That's there.
Right.
TiVo.
Think so.
So easy.
Your grandmother could do it.
Yeah, TiVo is nice and easy. That's why I really was shocked at how easy an experience it was.
Well,
and yeah. Both of our listeners will can appreciate
exactly,
that.
Exactly. So if you would like to try the TiVo, you know, if you want to vote for Brad Wardell, go out and buy a TiVo. You want to vote for Paul, go out and buy a SnapStream or build your own
SnapStream.
Yeah,
vote
for Paul. Okay. Thank you both very much.
It's a competition now.
All right. And thanks for listening, everyone. This podcast was brought to you by neowin.net and wincustomized.com. Support us by subscribing to us on iTunes, Podnova, or odeo.com. Look for us every week at www.poweruser.tv.
Vote for Paul.
Ha ha.